Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Here was Lance McCullers following Game 4, the closeout game in the ALDS, when he was asked about the pain in his forearm. Does he think it has anything to do with the ligament on which he had Tommy John surgery a couple years ago?
I don't think it has anything to do with my ligament. So, we'll have to just wait and see, you know, how I feel tomorrow and if we're going to get any imaging done, things like that. I mean, I wouldn't pitch for at least 5 days. So, and there's probably an off day mixed in there. So, 6 days. So we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. So here's the thing, Seth. Lance, if he were to pitch, the earliest he would pitch would be Monday in Game 3, presumably, if he's ready to go. If he's ready to give them anything, maybe they look at it and they go, we can probably get 50, 60 pitches out of you. I don't know how they determine that from an MRI, but let's assume for a second that if he were to pitch, Monday would be the day he would be pitching. Here's the thing. The drop dead date is really tomorrow as to determining can Lance be part of this series, because they've got to submit their roster for the ALCS by the morning of Game 1. Mm-hmm. So this may be something that drifts into tomorrow. I have no idea. Anytime somebody from the Astros or near the Astros, around the Astros, employed by the Astros, has been asked about it, they've kept a fairly optimistic face on it. James Click, as you alluded to earlier, was on 790 yesterday, and he used the words that seemed to be very minor. Brent Strom did an interview with Mark Berman where he didn't want to really commit to any sort of answer, but at the end said he's remaining optimistic about Lance.
Yeah.
Some of the other smoke signals have not been as optimistic on Lance. We just don't know. At this point, we just don't know what the Lance McCullers situation is going to be. Just real quick for some context here, Kent Emanuel, remember him? The guy who came in as a reliever and pitched 8 2/3 innings in a game this year in a Jake Odorizzi game? I had totally forgotten about Kent Emanuel, but he had Tommy John surgery. He was out for the year. He pitched earlier this season for the Astros. He was actually on with the afternoon guys yesterday with Clint and Show, and he shared his experience with Tommy John surgery and tried to at least give a little insight into what Lance McCullers might be feeling right now.
I will say, him being a Tommy John guy, at least in my experience, after surgery, it's kind of hard to figure out what the heck's going on with your arm after that. You know what I mean? Some days it's not going to feel good, even when you're quote unquote healthy after surgery. So tough to say. You know, obviously I'm hoping for the best. I think we all are. And, you know, hopefully I get a chance to talk with him about it. We've had the unfortunate brotherhood of being TJ partners here on the Stros.
Emmanuel was really good with them yesterday. It was a good interview. I encourage you to go find it. Seth, what's the plan B here? If there's no Lance McCullers and you're Dusty Baker, I mean, look, you don't, whatever the plan B is, you don't really need to worry about it until Game 3. I mean, I think games 1 and 2, I think, are set. You're going to start Fromber in Game 1. If Lance McCullers were healthy, you would be starting Fromber in Game 1 and Luis Garcia in Game 2. And then that's where the craziness begins, beginning with Game 3.
Right. So, I don't know. You've got Urquidy. we'll find out when the roster's announced whether Odorizzi's on this roster or not and what they're thinking about him. There's the huge, huge question mark of Greinke and what is he and what does he mean to you right now. It's not like I'm not concerned about this. I just feel like this Astros team has answers and solutions. They're not, none of them are perfect. Like nothing is as good as having your ace there. But this is a team that has six starting pitchers plus a Javier, you know, if you wanted to use them in that capacity, that the piggyback start becomes not that big a deal. And you can ultimately end up having a three-man rotation pretty easily with guys still being on their rest. So I'm not, it's not that I'm not concerned about it. It's just that I think that's the easy part, yeah, is figuring out exactly what the matchups are. This is the key with the gamesmanship. The gamesmanship matters. And James Click saying that it's minor, even if it's a lie, I don't know if it is or not. If it is a lie, I'm saying I'm not going to worry about it. Because all that matters is that you want the Red Sox to be scurrying and trying to figure out exactly what they're going to do based on whether McCullers goes or not. If the Red Sox knew for sure that McCullers wasn't going to be on that roster, then they can make a whole lot more decisions based on which guys they want active, that might be better matchups for McCullers and whatnot. So I think that whether it's true or not, the right play for the Astros is right up until tomorrow morning, just flat out saying that McCullers is no big deal. Yeah, he should be good.
Yeah, I think this I feel confident in. Right, I feel confident in predicting this right now. Odorizzi will be active in this series. Whether Lance McCullers is active or inactive for the series, Odorizzi will be active for this series. Because I think you need to treat this Lance, even if you feel like McCullers, whatever comes back from the MRI, that you feel like he's going to be good to go in game three, you gotta plan for the contingency that this could happen again. And if that's the case, I don't think Greinke is stretched out enough to where you feel like Greinke can be a starter for you again. I think Greinke can play a role for you, but I don't think he can be a starter. Odorizzi, I think, is somebody who can probably give you five innings in a game. And I think he needs to be available to you. Whether Lance is on the playoff roster or not, Odorizzi will be part of this playoff roster. That I'm very confident in right
then
now.
Then the other obvious issue and factor here, too, is, okay, if you're going to add, like, because let's say Lance is available, but you also have to bring in Odorizzi just in case because you don't feel 100% confident. Well, all right, so we also don't feel all that confident about Jake Meyers right this moment either. It would be easy if Jake Meyers were healthy to say, like, okay, well, you know, Jose Siri doesn't get to make this trip because we got to bring Odorizzi on. But now that becomes a little bit of a dicier situation.
Yeah, you're right. They went 14 field players and 12 pitchers in the previous series. So that's you're right. It becomes a fascinating question. Who starts game three? I think you touched on it. I think if Lance can't go, it's Urquidy's game in game three. And then game four is the game that you try to figure out here along the way, unless you lose the first two and then maybe you do something different. I have no idea. And then the other question, yeah, what's the makeup of the roster? You know, do you feel like you need more reinforcements on the pitching staff, especially if Lance is on the roster? Like, if Lance is on the roster, I think there's a better chance you go 13-13 instead of 14-12 because you might have to plan for the contingency. It's a longer series, too, now. It's a seven-game series. You might have to plan for that McCullers contingency.
Boy, and I'm glad you said the seven-game series part, too, because I'm looking at Garrett Stubbs, and I'm wondering about the wisdom of keeping three catchers on a roster when you have a starting pitcher who basically takes a day off every third month in September or something. But because it's a long series and because there's going to be pinch hitting opportunities, that goes into, you want to have Stubbs out there so you can keep Sean's personal hero Jason Castro available as a pinch hitter.
Well, not just keeping Castro available as a pinch hitter, but also, and it didn't come into play in this series because none of the games were close down the stretch. But presumably they're going to be in some closer games in this series. I mean, the odds just say that they will be. I think not only pinch hitting Castro, Seth, but then once you pinch hit Castro, if you only have two catchers, Castro has to stay in the game as your catcher. Or you leave Maldonado in and you've got no safety net because you've used Castro. If you pinch hit Castro in a close game late in the game and you've got a third catcher, then you can bring in Siri or whatever outfielder or speed guy left to go pinch run for him. It just gives you way more overall flexibility to have that third catcher. I want the third catcher. I just feel like it gives you more flexibility overall. So we'll keep an eye on the keep an eye on the Lance McCullers news wire here today. That's the big stuff going on with the Astros as they prepare for the Red Sox to come to town. Game one tomorrow night. Going to be a lot of fun. Fifth straight ALCS for the Houston Astros. All right. If the Texans are going to get their second win of the season, they are 10-point underdogs in Indianapolis on Sunday. A game that you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. Kickoff at noon. Seth and I got you for Texans Countdown at 9 a.m. The opponent just got, I guess from a Texans perspective especially, a whole lot stronger yesterday. We'll tell you why next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the Texans play the Colts on Sunday. I think...
It doesn't feel like it.
It does not feel like a this Colts weird, week.
This week, I thought this feels like my fourth Friday of the week. This is the longest week ever. Okay.
Yeah. No, it does. Well, I mean, the Astros playing this week, and the Astros succeeding this week has certainly been the big story. They play the Colts on Sunday, the Texans do. Look, it doesn't help that the Colts are 1-4 also. Like, this is not a high-profile game. I'd love to know how many 1-4 teams are double-digit favorites 6 weeks into the season in a game. The Colts are. They're 10-point favorites right now. I think it's a little much. We'll see how Davis Mills does on the road. His one road start this year did not go well in Buffalo. We know weather will not be an issue in Indianapolis unless the roof is broken. This is where Seth makes some sort of comment about Indianapolis and everything being broken in Indianapolis, probably, I would imagine. But
they probably have out-of-work carnies working at their stadium operating that kind of stuff. That's why you don't ever want to fly into Indianapolis. That's what they use for their air traffic control there.
Carnies?
Out-of-work carnies. Carnies, it's a noble profession, Sean, being an actual carny.
Yeah.
But if you're booted out because the meth got to be just too much, then that's where you go to Indy, and that's where you find your people.
In all seriousness, I bet there's a lot of out-of-work carnies right now because of COVID. COVID wiped out a lot of carnivals, I would imagine.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So back to the Colts. They're a 10-point favorite this weekend. I think it's a little much. We'll talk more about previewing the game as the week rolls on here. The bit of news that came out yesterday on the Colts side of things from an injury standpoint, while the Texans were losing arguably their best player to thumb surgery yesterday, Laremy Tunsil, the Colts get back a player who, while not their best player, not even close to their best player still, he is somebody that all of a sudden morphs into a Hall of Fame level player every time he sees the Texans on the other side of the field. That is T.Y. Hilton. The Colts announced they are activating wide receiver T.Y. Hilton to return to practice this week. He remains on IR for now, but this is a good sign moving forward. So it would appear, Seth, that there is a good chance that the Texans will have to deal with T.Y. Hilton. And I can only imagine, with all the holes there are in this defense, the way that Lovie Smith plays this defense. Now, I'm not worried about T.Y. Hilton getting behind the defense because Lovie is playing Lonnie Johnson about 45 yards off of the line of scrimmage. So I'm not worried about T.Y. Hilton running free deep down the field. I am worried about T.Y. Hilton settling in about 20, 25 yards in that mid-range and just piecing the Texans with about 9 catches at an average of about 26 yards a catch. Here are T.Y. Hilton's numbers against the Texans for his career. 18 games, so a little more than a full season, 97 catches, 1,718 yards, and 11 touchdowns. Basically, against the Texans, he morphs into Megatron. He's Calvin Johnson.
That would be like one of the all-time receiving seasons.
Yes.
If you put together almost 2,000 yards of receiving.
Right.
Well, actually, oh, no, that was over 18 games.
18 games.
So
still
like
really good.
A modern NFL season plus an extra one is a mm-hmm. bonus. Mm-hmm. So, I don't want to say what I'm about to say.
Go ahead. Say it.
Son of a damn it. I mean, all right. T.Y. Hilton is the least of my concerns. Son of a damn it.
Why,
I said it.
Why the all hell right. did you? Why did I encourage you to say that?
I don't know. I wanted to feel. Sean, I'm like Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson just said sometimes he just needs to let it rip and just go. And maybe that means an interception or so. So I got this Zach Wilson pep talk this morning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, yeah. Just say whatever you're feeling. Doesn't matter what, you know, and then there I did it.
Are you hey, Seth, are you surprised how slow the game is, too, at the professional level?
Yeah. <I'm>
My God.
What's the old horror movie if you say the same thing three times in a row?
I don't know. I know what you're talking about. You've brought this up before. Someone will text in.
Not Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
That's a different one. I'd love to see Beetlejuice right now.
What is the biggest of your concerns, then, if it's not T.Y. Hilton? What's your concern against the Indianapolis?
I guess my concern right now is because I would like Davis Mills to get the best opportunity to get some good film on him. And so by the end of the year, we know exactly what we feel about Davis Mills. Yeah. And I do think that most people by the end of the year are either going to feel like there's no way in hell they want Davis Mills, or you're going to feel like, oh, you know what? He really exceeded my expectations, and I think there's an upside here. There will be no in between. You are not allowed to be milquetoast on Davis Mills by the end of the year because it'll be time for the Texans to make a decision on whether to go for another guy or not.
Yeah.
So if Davis Mills is going to really show something as a young quarterback and exceed expectations, then he's got to do, in some respects, he's got to be ahead of the curve from where even Deshaun Watson was in his second and third season. Because remember, the Colts gave Deshaun Watson fits with two things.
Yeah.
One, blitzes off the edge, DB blitzes, safety and corner blitzes off the edge. And we've seen Davis Mills struggle with blitzes a little bit, or greatly at times. The other is just these lurking linebackers that do a really good job of disguising exactly what they're doing and what their intentions are. And that's foiled. That foiled a young Deshaun Watson, too. Deshaun maybe learned more from his games against the Colts than almost any other team. Eberflus, the defensive coordinator, did a really good job of scheming against him and finding his flaws and fooling him at times. And it made Deshaun a better quarterback. The question will be, okay, how ready is Davis Mills for that treatment?
So if you're concerned about Davis Mills, sounds like it has mostly to do, not mostly, but it sounds like your primary concern for Mills is who's pulling the trigger, pushing the buttons on the other side with Eberflus, which I think is totally valid. How concerned are you with the Tunsil injury as it pertains to Davis Mills' ability to at least play normal quarterback for this team?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's obviously a big concern because I think they're going to have to keep tight ends in to help out
chipping
with Jaron Christian and all that good old stuff. I mean, this Texans offensive line has been okay in pass protection for the most part. They've been abysmal as run blockers. And remember, going back to last year, that defensive line, remember Grover Stewart, the nose tackle? He looked like the second coming of Vince Wilfork, except like a leaner, svelter Vince Wilfork when he played against the Texans. He looked really, really good against that interior offensive line. DeForest Buckner is awesome. And that's going to be a tough test because they're going to have to keep extra guys in to help block for Davis Mills. But again, I'm not making any predictions. I'm not as pessimistic as I was about Davis Mills during training camp and obviously after the Bills game. He has pleasantly surprised me in two out of his three starts so far.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting and hoping that I get pleasantly surprised in this game. But it's going to be a climb uphill to be effective for this offense versus this defense right now.
Candyman is the movie that you were searching for,
Candyman,
as has been texted to us by no fewer than about 50 people in the last 2 minutes. So
basically, me saying that I'm not that concerned about T.Y. Hilton is the equivalent of saying Candyman in the mirror three times?
I guess, yeah, I guess. I haven't seen Candyman, so I'll take
this
your...
Candyman must not have been that good of a horror movie figure, because I don't even know what he looks like or
right.
anything.
He's not legendary.
He's no Freddy or Michael Myers.
Right, Jason.
He certainly isn't a pinhead. I never saw a pinhead movie, but I remember the posters, because that's a terrifying looking bro.
Yep.
Yeah.
Text message, fellas, the Texans are 1-4 and they have zero hope for a playoff spot. I wouldn't mind if Megatron himself came out to play for every opponent the Texans face this year, because a loss is what this team needs every week. That would be an interesting thing to track if there were a way to track it. Maybe I Pender poll this thing, but like, what is the ebb and flow of Texan fans? Like, where is the turning point where majority of the Texan fans start to cash it in to get higher draft capital? I don't know if we're there already. I have no idea.
This is the problem. And this is not some soft kind of hazy, you got to build character or you got to have team morale or something like that. This is strictly strategic, in my opinion. If you're on a football team that's clearly not trying to make a push for the playoffs or anything, and you'd like to maximize your draft position next year, you have to balance that out with, okay, how do I develop young players, or even figure out how good a young player is if he's playing on a team that's getting slaughtered by 40 points every single week? And I don't think it's possible. I think that a lot of good young players will be ruined in football, more so than any other sport.
No doubt.
And that I think especially a position like quarterback or receiver or defensive back, some of these positions, it's really hard to be good without at least some level of competence around you. So I'm A-okay with finding that sweet spot where, look, you're competing in games. Maybe you upset a few along the way somehow, so you end up picking sixth instead of second or first. I'm okay with that, because I don't think it's as simple as just going 0-for for 3 years in a row and then all of a sudden turning around and there you are. I would say with the Browns, there's parts of the Browns where I feel like this is a team that looks culturally like they still don't quite get it, or they're not quite there. They're not playing up to the level of their talent just yet. And you wonder, okay, how much of that is because they were so haphazard and slovenly for so long that you don't have some semblance of a framework like to win with? So I need him to compete. I want him to compete.
I would say empirically too, and I know people are going to say Kayvon Thibodeau, or they're going to say this guy or that guy. Maybe people are still married to a quarterback. There's not a player that's worth losing games for in this draft right now. There just isn't. Like, you pick in fifth, pick in sixth. There's plenty of all pros you get at five in a draft where there's not a transcending quarterback at the top.
Right. With this team, what I'm talking about isn't like I want them to make a miraculous push for the playoffs or anything. I'm saying, I don't care if they pick second versus if they pick sixth or seventh.
Right.
Because realistically, I'd kind of like Nick to trade back anyway if there's no quarterback there that he really likes. Maybe a trade back for Malik Willis. If Malik Willis. You might have one of those glorious years where a lot of the teams at the top of the draft actually don't need a quarterback, because like the Jets, the Jaguars, all these teams, they have their quarterback.
Yep.
So some guys that you wouldn't want to stretch and reach for at number 3 or number 4, they might be available at 10 or 11. And so it might work out well for the Texans regardless.
One of the things that was a staple of the O'Brien era was Bill O'Brien had his favorites, and then he had his guys that got thrown in the doghouse. Just ask Kiki QT or Brandon Brooks. And then he had what we'll call the doghouse, and what Seth and I would call the poodle palace, you know, for the Nick Martins of the world. Has this regime developed a poodle palace and a doghouse on the roster yet? And if so, who are in each of those domiciles? That is next.
He's a great teammate.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business.
From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. We'll get to headlines here in about 10 minutes or so. We've got the Uvalde audio as well. We'll get to that at the top of the hour. Nathan Uvalde talking some smack about the Astros. Alvin's finest. Well, Nolan Ryan is Alvin's finest. Alvin native, Nathan Uvalde of the Boston Red Sox. We'll get to that.
Do you know I had a UPS driver once who used to be on Nolan Ryan's route? And he said it was an interesting route because it was just every now and then a gigantic shipment of baseballs would come in, and that was for Nolan Ryan to autograph. And then 2 days later, he'd pick up this gigantic shipment of baseballs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Did Nolan ever come out and sign for the stuff when he would bring it when he would bring it by?
There were strict instructions to not make eye contact with Nolan Ryan.
Really? Okay.
No. I completely made that up.
I'm just joking.
Nolan Ryan would come out wearing a kimono and sunglasses, and you were not allowed. You're not allowed to make eye contact.
Smoking a pipe. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those Hunter S. Thompson cigarette.
Right. Yeah. So Nick Caserio. We had Nick Caserio on yesterday. This plays into what we teased into the segment here. A staple of the Bill O'Brien era was it was very easy to determine who are the favorites of management and who are the not so favorites of management. Seth and I would call it the poodle palace and the doghouse. Mm-hmm. It would be safe to assume, I think, that right now, given the fact that he was inactive on this past Sunday, despite being a productive player. Yesterday, John McClain, it felt like because Charles Omenihu isn't Reggie White, like that it makes perfect sense to sit Charles Omenihu. I'm not getting that still.
Yeah, now Cully went on when asked about it at the press conference. He was pretty emphatic. Do we have that?
We do.
Yeah, this is what Cully said about Charles Omenihu.
Well, it's just practice. It's just practice. How they practice. We always make that decision, John, after a week of practice, especially when you've got that many guys that have been rotating throughout the year, and we basically on Friday make a decision at the end, based on how we do in practice of who's down and who's up, and for us at that position, we're always having somebody down that could be up, deserve to be up, but because of the room and the space, you know, we're always going to have one guy down that maybe should have be up.
Okay. I mean, like Charles Omenihu plays the same position as Jacob Martin, who's been invisible this year. Like Whitney Mercilus has not been good this year. There's clearly something going on, in my opinion, with Charles Omenihu. We asked Caserio about it yesterday. Caserio's answer was kind of long. We don't need to play it. Caserio basically, when we said, what does Charles Omenihu need to do to get back on the field? He kind of said, here's what everybody needs to do to get on the field. You know, he didn't give anything specific to Omenihu.
Well, I do think that... I think maybe because we're talking about, oh, he must be in the doghouse because he's not playing, even though he's been one of the more productive players. I do think that they do genuinely believe in pushing the culture of competition. And even though some of the things they've done, I don't think necessarily illustrate that. I think on the defensive line, that is where by far they have the most viable NFL players.
I agree with that.
They're too deep where you've got various guys that, you know what, if a team had DeMarcus Walker starting on their team right now, it wouldn't be like an emergency or something.
Right.
Same with Malik Collins, Jaleel Johnson, Roy Lopez. That's just a defensive tackle. Then you go out to the outside, and it's the same way. So even though you don't have an ideal group of pass rushers, I mean, these guys aren't going to, you know, the Pro Bowl or anything like that, there is a lot of genuine competition. So it might be as simple as, yeah, we feel like you guys are kind of interchangeable, and we're going to make practice ultra competitive during the week. And the guys that make the fewest mental errors and the guys that do the best otherwise are going to be the guys that play on Sunday.
That's definitely the answer we got, you know, from David Culley. Yeah. That's absolutely the answer we got. It's just, man, there's such a stark difference on Sundays between these guys.
And the other thing of it too is that, look, Charles Omenihu ended up starting in week one, playing a whole lot in the first few weeks, but for whatever reason, the team issued depth chart listed him at the beginning of the year as a third string defensive end
throughout the entire preseason.
On a depth chart that had very few third stringers at any position, they chose to put Omenihu there. So there's some doghouse element to it somehow.
So let's lead into this here. So let's start with the doghouse since we're talking about Omenihu here. What other players? The doghouse, in case you're wondering, is a place where players who are not in the best graces of coaching and management are put. It was started by Bill O'Brien. It was built by Bill O'Brien at the corner of Kiki QT Street and Brandon Brooks Avenue. That is where the doghouse sits right now, in not the nicest part of town. Charles Omenihu, I think, is 100% in the doghouse right now, Seth. Who would you add to the list here?
Well, Zach Cunningham, who was missing for undisclosed reasons at the end of training camp one day, who was benched for disciplinary reasons for a quarter before the Cleveland Browns game, who at times, I hesitate to say this because he moves very smoothly, and it always looks like he'll make a big play sometimes and look like he didn't really care all that much about it. But it seems even more so this year, where he's almost somehow disengaged or something, and he's not on the field on third downs. You know, for a guy who might be one of the best pound-for-pound athletes on the team, he's not out there on third downs because he's abysmal in pass coverage. So, yeah, I would say Cunningham's in the doghouse.
All right, so Zach Cunningham, we think, is in the doghouse, and I think that's a fair thing. Who else would
we
Johnson,
add? Lonnie Johnson is a candidate. I'm not so sure, because Lonnie Johnson, if you were genuinely in the doghouse, would be having more reps docked at this point, where they're giving him every opportunity to play. I think Lonnie Johnson is in some kind of purgatory or something, where they're definitely evaluating him. And he's done some really good things, but then he's also done some really inexperienced type of things. And they're trying to move it more towards the good side.
And he's still tweeting too. Like, he was tweeting again yesterday. Like, he's tweeting, seen so many times they did me wrong. It's a Meek Mill lyric. He tweeted bleep crazy again yesterday. With a laughing, crying emoji. Again yesterday, he tweeted yesterday, timing is everything, with an hourglass next to it.
Like, yeah, I think, you know what these guys need to understand? It's like the fan base here has, they've kind of had it with cryptic tweets, all right? Like, it hasn't been good for the Houston Texans franchise when various people have started tweeting cryptically. So lay off the cryptic tweets. I don't want to hear, like, 3 days later, oh, everybody's so stupid, I was actually tweeting about the, I don't know, some regatta in France or something.
No, right.
No, just leave it alone for the love of it.
Yeah. Is Scotty Phillips in the doghouse, or is he just somebody they're nervous about playing right now? I would assume
Scotty
were in the doghouse, he wouldn't be on the roster. Probably is my guess.
No, Scotty Phillips is in the incubator. I think they're he's a little premature puppy, and they're trying to be sure that the puppy survives until there's better days ahead.
Yeah,
it's like if you're I don't know. There's a chemical fire outside, so you got to keep the puppy indoors. That's what Scotty Phillips is right now.
Gotcha.
They know that running backs get used up really quickly, so they want to keep him healthy until they can use him at a more advantageous time.
I got you. You know, the doghouse, I can't think of many more doghouse guys, and you know why I think that is, Seth? Because doghouse guys on this team, this regime is not afraid to just move on and kick them out of the doghouse.
They get shipped out.
Right. O'Brien would keep them around and make them inactive and, cast little snide, passive-aggressive aspersions at them at press conferences. This team will just boot them out the door and wait for the SBCA to pick them up.
Exactly. They would use a phrase, Sean, that I've, like, it's one of these kind of boomer phrases that I've caught myself starting to use when you're, like, the uptight teacher. Shape up or ship out, Buster.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
I
would stand at the door and
so
I would
edgy.
Put one hand on a hip and I'd shake my finger with the left hand. You would say, you shape up or ship out,
right,
Buster.
Right.
Yeah.
The doghouse, love it or leave it. Yeah, exactly. All right, so the
you know who might actually now be in the doghouse at least too is because Des King is playing on the outside where he does not belong. But Vernon Hargraves, I suppose, being demoted.
Yeah, he might be in the doghouse. Well, it's about time. He felt like a Poodle Palace guy for a while because they kept re-signing him.
Yeah.
All right, so Poodle Palace is, I would say, a much more expansive, much more full residence. You can find that at the corner of Nick Martin Drive and Alfred Blue Lane, the Texans Poodle Palace, where all the favorites are. I would start, Seth, with anybody who's got ties to the New England Patriots. Danny Amendola, Rex Burkhead, Terrence Brooks, Marcus Cannon, if he were still healthy. I would say they're all in the Poodle Palace.
If they weren't in the Poodle Palace, they're gone already. But a lot of the guys that were kept here were almost kept specifically because they knew what they were getting with these guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're by definition in the Poodle Palace.
Let me throw a few more at you here. Is Philip Lindsay in the Poodle Palace?
Philip Lindsay is
negative 0.2 yards per carry.
The fact that he's still getting touches, I'd say, puts him in the Poodle Palace. Like, what are they waiting for with Philip Lindsay?
Right.
That, like, all of a sudden, is he going to gain 30 pounds or something? He's going to start bulldozing people instead of going down at first contact? I don't know.
Yeah.
He's definitely in the Poodle Palace. That's one of the more infuriating ones.
Yes.
Is that, if you've got five running backs on the roster, you might as well use all of them, for the young promising
Except for Scotty Phillips, who's got the most juice. Is Whitney Merciless in the Poodle Palace?
I think he is.
I think he was the second the pen hit the paper on his contract extension.
But that was before. Okay,
he hasn't played good football since he signed that contract.
I know. I'm trying to think of the timing of that, the timeline of that. I mean, that wasn't a Caserio extension.
No. But my guess is Caserio might have moved on from Whitney if it were financially feasible to move on.
But he still gets
a ton of snaps.
Yeah,
he's still doing commercials here in town. And I like Whitney. I think Whitney's a good guy and everything. But
that's what makes the Zach Cunningham situation so frustrating was that the Texans actually made it harder to trade and get rid of Zach Cunningham in the spring. With Cunningham, my own little theory would be that I think Lovie Smith, when he came in and was watching players on film, probably looked at Zach Cunningham and said, wow, this guy runs all over the place. He's not afraid of contact. He gets a bunch of tackles. He's awful in pass coverage, but he's really, really fast.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing Lovie Smith thought he could do something with Zach Cunningham in his pass coverage. And at some point along the way, they realized, Zach Cunningham's not getting it. I don't know whether he can't or doesn't want to or whatever, but he's just not good in pass coverage. And that's when that's how they ended up giving him more guaranteed money in the spring when they really shouldn't have.
Yeah, I mean, Cully literally said earlier this week he's a two-down linebacker. That's it. He said it. Two more names I want to bounce off you for the Poodle Palace, Seth, where all the Texans management favorites get put up in nice, luxurious accommodations. Jacob Martin. Is Jacob Martin a Poodle Palace guy?
I don't think so. I think Jacob Martin serves a purpose, and they like having that speed out there, but they probably know what he is. I mean, they're just they want to rotate above a bunch of defensive linemen, and Jacob Martin's one of the fastest upfield guys. He's not versatile enough to be a complete NFL player right now, but he serves a purpose.
Is Kaimi Fairbairn a Poodle Palace guy?
No, I think he's – I guess you and I differ in the definitions here. I think he's more of a contract guy.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like David Culley – as you pointed out earlier, it doesn't seem like David Culley is all that fond of specialists, the way he talks about him.
No, he put everything in those sequences on Sunday, the botched punt and the missed field goals and kicks. Everything was at the foot. Kaimi deserves – to have it at the foot. The Cam Johnston thing became a Cam Johnston problem on that aborted fake punt.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that I don't mean to say that he's not fond of them, but he definitely doesn't he's not going to kowtow to him or anything or worry about their feelings or their psychology or anything. He's like, "No, well, look, we pay this kicker to make field goals, so we put him in." To which I would say, "Yeah, but he's banged up." Now, hey, by the way, since we were pretty harsh with Culley on the decision to go for the field goal, I mean, we do have to point out that Green Bay game where the Packers, incredibly, with Aaron Rodgers on the roster on 4th-and-2, decide to let Mason Crosby, who's missed 5 field goals already, go ahead and try to win the game and kick a field goal, which he did.
Yes.
So I don't like. I like Kaimi Fairbairn better than Mason damn Crosby as a kicker.
Right about now, probably. I mean, Kaimi needs to get healthy again, probably. Yeah, you know. That whole sequence, it was a game where Davis Mills had converted 3 fourth downs already, and now all of a sudden you're not going to put it in the hands of I feel like if I played blackjack with Culley, Seth, if he sat at a blackjack table, he would be the guy that is just doing things haphazardly that's ruining the shoe for the whole table. Like, he hits on 16 sometimes. And then, this time I'll stay on 16. Why? My gut. Oh, God. Stop it. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
For the record, I love the Poodle Palace and Doghouse Talk. I just, one of my favorite things. All right.
It's like a circle of trust, but a little bit more depressing.
It's a circle of trust where there's clear distinction between the trusted and the non-trusted.
That's, you know, true.
The non-trusted actually get, they're not just outside the circle, they get put in a doghouse.
It's not as much fun to do doghouse in baseball because every really good player ends up having bad streaks. It's different than in football. If you suck for 4 games, that's it. We hate you forever.
Yes.
Where in baseball, baseball, you suck for 4 games. It's like, oh yeah, but you're still a Hall of Famer.
You still got 3 games left that week.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to some Texans news. First, let's get to the injury update. David Culley came into the press conference yesterday. First, congratulated the Houston Astros. Nice touch. Said that some of the things Dusty said he used with his team in their little pep talk before practice yesterday. Nice touch. Then he gave the injury update, the list of injuries that the team is dealing with right now.
Laremy Tunsil will be having surgery tomorrow on his thumb. Nico Collins will
okay,
be
hold on.
Coming.
Hit pause. Like, when he just moved right on from Laremy Tunsil getting surgery. Like, here's the list.
Yeah.
Laremy Tunsil, our best player, is getting surgery on his thumb, which will have him out for several weeks. On to Nico Collins.
He knew he was going to get some questions.
He
about
did.
It.
He
was
did.
Just getting it all out there.
He did. I just found it. I was waiting for a record scratch or something in the press conference. here's the rest of the injury update.
Nico Collins will be coming back to practice this week. We'll take it day to day with him, but he is okay to come practice on a limited basis, and we'll see where he's at. Danny will be on the field today. He's making progress. Hopefully, we can get him to the point where he's able to go. And Ross Blacklock is on the field, but we're kind of slowing him back in just for the conditioning part of it. KPL is still not going to be ready to go. He'll still be he'll be out this week, but he's going through rehab. Other than that, everybody else is ready to go.
So that's the injury update for the week. KPL, by the way, is Kevin Pierre-Lewis, for those who don't know, because he's not really gotten on the field yet this year. He was supposed to start for this team at linebacker. The big story coming out of that is Laremy Tunsil getting surgery. I would say Nico Collins is I think, something that's intriguing, that he's coming back and see if a slightly more experienced Davis Mills can take advantage of Nico Collins being back out there. A little more detail on the Tunsil part of this, which is the headliner from all those injuries you just listed.
Laremy Tunsil will be having surgery tomorrow on his thumb.
So this surgery means Laremy's out for the season?
It's
maybe we're thinking right now it could be 4 weeks. Not really sure, but that's what we're thinking it could be.
Sometimes with thumb injuries, some players play through it. What was kind of the decision to go ahead and get that done?
We felt like it was best for him to get it done now to be able to come back and be able to play for us in a few weeks, hopefully.
All right, so there you go. The conspiracy theory espoused by a listener to In the Loop yesterday was that the Texans thought it'd be a good idea to get Laremy's surgery done immediately because if it's a four-week turnaround, the trade deadline is in 3 weeks, and that would mean that a team wanting to trade for Laremy Tunsil would at least get him for most of the remainder of the season and potentially postseason and for another 2 years post-trade deadline. Does that theory hold water?
I like that theory.
I do too.
I like it a lot. I like the theory, and I think that it might be a valid theory. This is the problem, is that I remain close to staunchly opposed to trading Laremy Tunsil unless it's a blockbuster deal, only because if you look at the Miami Dolphins, who traded Laremy Tunsil for two first-round picks, and they ended up being really good picks, their offensive line still sucks. Still awful. Still abysmal. And offensive linemen tend to age well. I don't know how the Texans feel about Laremy Tunsil internally. You know, maybe there are issues and they don't feel like he fits the culture. Who knows? I have zero clue about any of that. But unless it were for those reasons, I'd prefer not to see Laremy Tunsil get traded. Like Brandon Cooks. Okay. Brandon Cooks. You trade for Brandon Cooks. At the time, a lot of people derided it. I thought that it at least made sense. I thought the value for Brandon Cooks was okay. I had other issues with the trade and how it was related to the DeAndre Hopkins trade and how it affected your draft and all of that. But the price was okay. The problem is that, as Rivers McCown pointed this out in his article yesterday, the problem is that Brandon Cooks is an aging wide receiver, getting older wide receiver, who's probably not going to help you far off in the future. Yeah. So ultimately, that trade's not going to help you in the long run. But it's still one of my least objectionable Bill O'Brien moves. Laremy Tunsil, trading for him, you paid too much, but that's water under the bridge. If you trade to get rid of him, you might end up spending two more first-round picks finding the next Laremy Tunsil.
Yep.
And even if you spend two first-round picks on it, you might whiff on both of those. That's just no matter how good a GM you are. So I tell you all that to tell you this. I'd prefer not to get rid of a franchise caliber building block left tackle at the beginning of a rebuild process.
The other bit of news coming out of yesterday's press conference with David Culley, and I'll circle this back to our interview with Nick Caserio yesterday, Seth. Seth and I interviewed Nick Caserio about 24 hours ago, 7:30 yesterday. If you want to find it on the podcast, I would subscribe to the podcast as well, Payne and Pendergast, the very popular Payne and Pendergast podcast.
Women will be so impressed with you.
They will, and give us a 5-star review while you're there. Nick Caserio, we asked Nick Caserio yesterday, how is Tyrod Taylor coming along health-wise, and when he comes back, what is the dynamic? What happens with Tyrod Taylor? Does he start again for you guys?
Making progress. It's really day-to-day, quite frankly. When Tyrod is ready to go, whenever that is, then we'll assess the situation and we'll ultimately make the decision that we feel is best for our team. Going into, before he was hurt or up until the point that he was hurt, Tyrod had played well. He played really well, actually. So things change. But again, we'll take it one day at a time and then we'll make the decision that we feel is best. And we're not going to predetermine anything, not do anything until we get in that position.
All right. So nothing predetermined, leaving options open. It could be either guy. When Tyrod comes back, 3 hours later, David Culley was asked about the Tyrod Taylor situation. And first he was asked about the detail on the injury. Let's play that to begin with here.
Tyrod Taylor available to play? Is he healthy enough for
something? Tyrod is not available right now.
Do you have any better idea of how much longer Tyrod will be out?
I do not right now. And we're hoping this, we're just taking it week by week right now. He's progressing very well, but he's not ready right now.
Do you expect him to be ready at some point this season?
I hope so.
Okay, so we hope so. We know Nick Caserio just said that when Tyrod comes back, they'll make the decision that's in the best interest of the team. We're not going to predetermine anything. David Culley was asked the same question. What happens with Tyrod Taylor when he comes back?
And at that point, how do you approach choosing who starts, weighing upon, future analysis? Obviously, you got a rookie. You got a guy on a one-year contract. How do you approach that?
When Tyrod comes back and he's healthy, he's our starting quarterback.
How does the coach, are you balancing how
thinking about the future versus making sure the guys in the locker room feel like you're doing everything to put them in a position to win?
As far as the quarterback situation, he gives us the best chance to win. I mean, he's our starting quarterback. He was our starting quarterback when he went down. He's doing an excellent job, and when he comes back, he'll still be our starting quarterback.
Call me crazy, Seth. That sounds predetermined to me.
that sounds like something's
been determined.
That's just what they're going to do.
I guess. What do you want them to do?
If Davis Mills is still playing well, I don't want to basically screw over Tyrod Taylor, but I think it's for the good of the team.
Yeah.
That if Davis Mills is doing all right and the team around him is okay, then go ahead and see what you have with Davis Mills and mm-hmm. develop him to the best of your ability. That's the best for the long-term future. And that's just, it's unfortunate for Tyrod Taylor, but look, Tyrod Taylor's on a one-year deal with his team. He's not the future of your team. If there's any part of you at all that thinks that Davis Mills might be an adequate solution or could possibly, if there's a 10% chance that he's an adequate solution, you got to find out if he is or not, or if you can feel more secure about it. So old school notions aside, I appreciate it. I think that's a noble way to feel. But it's also like, man, this is the NFL. This is pro sports. There's no loyalty. This isn't like a senior in high school who deserves it for whatever. No, it's the NFL on a rebuilding roster.
We said earlier in the show when we played that audio, we said it's either a miscommunication between GM and head coach or it's an overcommunication by the head coach. I have a hard time believing that the two of them have not discussed scenarios with Tyrod coming back. What are we going to do? Like, I just don't believe that to be true. The two of them talk quite a bit, and I just don't believe I think there's a good chance that David Culley might have done what David Culley does, which is be a little too forthcoming with the media about where the team is at with all this right now. Someone brought up a good point on the text page, Seth. The next time David Culley gets asked this question, which is why Davis Mills having a good game this weekend could make this interesting. Let's say Davis Mills has another game this weekend like he had against New England.
And this is classic. It's going to get asked. This is quarterback controversy. People love this stuff. Even on a bad team,
right,
people love quarterback controversy.
Someone will ask, do you feel the same this week as you did last week that Tyrod Taylor is still your starter? We will get the tell as to whether it was a miscommunication or an overcommunication between GM and head coach.
Will we get to tell, though? I mean, if he changes what he says, then it could either be... I mean, they might just not have talked about it at all beforehand for whatever reason.
Maybe. At the very least, you and I will be given a juicy piece of meat that we can sink our teeth into.
That we can agree on.
Yeah.
I like that both those guys started off. They made a point of congratulating the Astros, which I know you could say, like, oh, whatever, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. With the previous regime, it almost always felt grudging for them to acknowledge anything the Astros had done. I always felt like there was some kind of weird jealousy there or something. Whereas, Sean, Caserio comes from, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, he came from New England.
Shut
he came
up.
From the Patriots. It's true. If you looked at Boston in this century, particularly maybe from 2004 up until, when was the last Red Sox championship? Was that 2018?
18.
So 2004 to 2018, which... Those first of all, let's see. In 2004 and 2018, both the Patriots and the Red Sox won world championships.
Yep.
And then sprinkled in through there was a Celtics championship. There was even a Bruins championship sandwiched by those two.
Yep.
And I think that for a while there in Boston, it kind of seemed like the mecca of pro sports. And I wonder if it almost felt like there was some kind of synergistic quality where it just gets into the water and teams just start operating differently. So I think Caserio, who is an analytical dude, probably genuinely appreciates a lot of what the Astros have done and a lot of what the Rockets have done. I would absolutely love if somehow my promise of a golden age of Houston sports that I made back in 2015 would finally come to pass. We got super close. We're still working on it.
Before we get to the Astros, I want to make sure I get the ID in here. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. All right, so the Astros. Let's shift gears to the Astros for a couple minutes here, Seth. We're waiting on news with Lance McCullers. I've not seen anything come down yet regarding Lance McCullers and his availability or lack thereof for the ALCS. Of course, he left game 4 of the ALDS with some forearm discomfort. That's unfortunately, that always feels like it's code for elbow issues, but we'll wait and see. They're trying to keep a happy face on this thing. In the meantime, we do need to start looking ahead here to the Red Sox. The game one is tomorrow. What's so funny?
I'm just thinking of the next time we see some horrific elbow injury where somebody's like their arms bent backwards at a 90-degree angle, and we're going to have to call it forearm tightness.
It's a forearm tightness,
Not a Houston-area athlete, everybody. I'm not jinxing us. But no. Next time you see somebody completely dislocate their elbow, we'll just call it forearm tightness.
Seth, what are the stat nerds saying about this series? How are they forecasting this right now? I figure you're pretty plugged into that stuff. The 538s of the world. I feel, weren't you the guest speaker at the annual meeting for 538 this year? Because you're such a stat nerd.
At the not at 538. I was at the Sloan conference.
Oh, okay. I got you.
They had me up there. Hold on. I have to look up Astros County, who used to have an awesome website where he would do all kinds of stuff, but now he's focusing on real life. But he put out the FanGraph simulations and the 538.com.
Give me good news here, Seth.
Where they run their, you know, tens of thousands. Okay, you want the good news first or the sketchy news?
Give me the good news first. I'm feeling it's a good news day. Give me the good news first.
Okay, so 538.com, who I believe, if I remember properly, they were the most bullish on the Astros in the previous series.
Ah.
They have Houston 61% chance of winning this series to Boston's 39%, which I know everybody, that might not sound like a lot in baseball. That's a pretty heavy
favorite. Are you kidding
me?
I'll just put it this way. If you're a gambler and you're hitting 61% of your picks, you're buying an island somewhere. Like, that's 61% in baseball is a lot. That's a lot. And I'll be honest with you, that feels like too much in this series.
Now FanGraphs has Boston as the 50.1% favorite.
Okay.
To Houston's 49.9. So I think it's pretty clear here that 538.com has gone out and hired the best computers to do their work, and that FanGraphs is still operating on an old Commodore 64 or something back in their mom's basement.
I'll be honest with you.
If they own a basement.
If they even have a basement. I'll be honest with you, of the two that you just said, the 61% Astros in favor and the other one that's a virtual coin flip, especially if McCullers is banged up and can't go in this series, the second one is the one that feels more accurate to me. This feels like a very even series, especially if you go position by position. Yeah. This is a very, very talented Red Sox team, and it's a Red Sox team with probably a little deeper bullpen than the Astros have right now, though the bullpen pitched well in game four, so we'll see. That coin flip feels more accurate.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.